Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And good afternoon to you too as well. It's Thursday, July 31st in the year of our Lord, 2025. I'm Ian Hoke sitting in for Scoot. We expect him back tomorrow. He sure has missed you. He's had a little bit of time away, but, you know, he loves working. So I'm sure that he's got a lot to say, a lot he wants to share with you and talk about. He'll be here tomorrow. You can do that. But we got a great show for you lined up today. We're going to talk a little bit about coastal restoration. We're going to talk a little bit about clean water and sanitation and irrigation projects all over the world. And I got plenty of time right in the sort of donut hole there in the 2 o'clock hour to talk to you about anything on your mind. I had kind of thought, you know, maybe today could be like a, you know, it's free for all Thursday. I don't know what you say, three for all Thursday. That doesn't make any sense. But you'd see what I'm trying to do here is like if, you know, I'm not going to be on the air tomorrow. I'm going to be working in the back tomorrow. So if there's anything you want to run by me about anything we had on the show earlier this week or anything else that's sticking in your craw, we can certainly do that today. A story that really kind of caught my attention right out of the gate this morning is this incident on this Delta Airlines flight. Did you see about that?
What's going on with that?
So they say it's turbulence, right? And I think most of us have been on a plane that's experienced turbulence, right? Where it kind of rattles the plane. It's sort of a low vibration. I don't know that that's the best word to describe what apparently happened to this plane. And I'm not saying that Delta or the FAA or the NTSB is deliberately misleading us, but the kind of turbulence that most of us are familiar with doesn't send 25 people to the hospital. And according to reports from people that were on that plane, the plane, you know, is at cruising altitude, and then it suddenly pulls up quite a bit, and then it goes into a sort of free fall and nosedives, right? Before pulling back up again, nosediving once more until it stabilizes at about 37,000 feet. That is called porpoising. And that is a phenomenon that you can kind of maybe visualize if you see a porpoise jumping up and down through the water, right? Brothers and sisters, if you are not belted in, when your plane starts porpoising, you're in for a bad time. Imagine, if you will, that you are a flight attendant or somebody who's on your way back from the restroom, somebody that's standing out of your seat when the plane takes that dive. The length of the cabin in that Airbus, I looked it up this morning, I did the math, the length of that cabin is just about 50 meters, 50 yards, half a football field. Okay. An Olympic-sized swimming pool. Okay. It's about 14 stories. So imagine, if you will, that you're at the back of the plane, not buckled up to anything, and the front of the plane tips down to such a degree that you are now falling through the cabin of the plane towards the cockpit for 50 meters, 150 feet, 14 stories. And then you maybe impact a couple of the seats on the way there. Maybe you bounce off the wall. Maybe you smack into the cockpit door just in time for the plane to then pull up again so that you have the opportunity to then tumble backwards down to the galley in the rear of the plane. And now you can start to see how this quote-unquote turbulence incident sent 25 people to area hospitals. More will come out about this. We'll see, you know, probably a sort of 3D rendering of what the flight looked like. But bad time for the skies. Not the friendly skies right now.
I guess it would be a bad time for people to be prairie dogging while the plane is porpoising.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, I can think of no place worse to be in the restroom. Here's a text that says, the worst part of that story would be losing that $10 drink. Yeah, man. I would be pretty upset if I bought like a $10, you know, whatever cheap-ass scotch they have on there.
Not correct.
It's like I'm seatbelted in. I'm just sitting here, you know, playing Tears of the Kingdom on my Switch and drinking scotch, and now the scotch is all over. It's, you know, falling down to the front of the plane.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought maybe this was a different airplane story, that there was an airplane that went into a nosedive because it was trying to dodge a Swedish fighter plane that was going across it. Like,
I did see something about
that. So this is not the same nose. This is two different nosedives.
This is two different situations. Here's a text that says turbulence is becoming more and more common and will increase in intensity due to, you have the drum roll on the board right there.
Give me one second.
Okay. Take your time. Yeah. I have a story printed out from the BBC about this, but a texter beat me to it. Turbulence is becoming more and more common and will increase in intensity due to climate change. That's right. They call it, calm air turbulence. Shorthand is CAT. You know, turbulence is a thing that pilots and radar operators and people that work in the aviation industry, they know where it is. They know, like, oh, you can't fly through that because the turbulence will be too bad. Well, as the upper atmosphere destabilizes, as the jet stream starts to get all wiggly-piggledy, you're going to see more incidents of planes flying into CAT, calm air turbulence. Areas where, I don't know, there's shifting air or things are too hot or too cold. I don't know, this is moving around. I'm not an atmospheric scientist. But there's going to be more of that, and it's going to be worse. So, you know, take a train. I don't know.
So when you said the word worse, that kind of, maybe I asked you this before. Whenever there's incidences of, we're going to have an overactive storm season or there's more turbulence in the air. Yeah. We all contributed to climate change. Mm-hmm. Why does it always seem that climate always changes for the worse or the negative? Is there any instances where climate is changing for the better? Like, hey, climate is changing, but look at all this good stuff that's happening. Is it always negative? Like, is climate change everything that's bad?
Unless you're kind of like at the Arctic Circle, I would offer yes. Because even, you know, if you're in the global south or somewhere near the equator, you're going to have more of these wet bulb events where it's, you know, just blisteringly hot. And it doesn't matter if you're in the shade or if you're drinking a lot of Gatorade. Human bodies cook in some of those temperatures. You know, every summer we see, like, oh, my God, along the Red Sea, it was 130 degrees. Or in Bangladesh, it was 130 degrees. But at the Arctic Circle, like some of those Nordic countries, you know, Russia, Canada, Finland, Norway, the people that are way up there, they're going to suddenly have a lot more arable land that they can now farm, which, you know, will be good for them over the course of a century. I guess it's all going to be pretty disruptive everywhere else in the meanwhile. But, you know, for humans, climate change is almost universally a disaster. The planet doesn't particularly care, I don't think, you know. But it's where we get our water from. It's where we grow our crops. All those things are going to be massively disrupted. But, you know, if you're a farmer in Siberia, you might be like, yay, climate change.
you're a knowledgeable guy, seem like. So since this is Three for All Thursday, okay. I want to throw this concept at you that I just discovered and see you how you feel about it. I'm always surprised how people utilize AI.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's one of those things why haven't I ever thought of this? Well, earlier this week, I've seen that there are women that are not happy in their relationships, right?
Go on.
But the guy isn't necessarily guilty of doing anything wrong. They're just bored in the relationship. So what they're doing now, instead of just breaking up with them and say, hey, you're a good guy, but it's just stale,
mm-hmm.
they're making AI videos of their boyfriends kissing other women as an excuse to say, hey, you cheated on me. Now I can get out this relationship. Now the guy, he's completely confused because he sees the video. It looks exactly like him.
Dude,
the same hairstyle,
whack.
Clothes, and all that. So it's this phenomenon that I would never think to do anything like that with AI.
If my girlfriend generated an AI video of me kissing someone else, I would say, I'm dumping you.
They make the clip just short enough. Because you know, the longer an AI video goes on, you can start to see the signs.
Yeah,
but
they got
make
six
it just
fingers
like
or whatever.
Three seconds to 7 seconds, and they have it at their phone. So it's really quick, and it looks really convincing. I've seen some of them, the guy's even like now they're trying to recall, like, was I drunk? Did somebody drug me? Do I know this person? So in that moment of confusion, that's when the woman takes the opportunity to say, all right, you cheated on me. And dude can't explain it because he's bamboozled because it looks that convincing.
I think in that situation, what I would do is I would dump the person I was with for being so disingenuous. And then I would go make my own AI video of me with that beautiful AI babe from the nightclub. But, you know, that's just me. Okay, something a little more serious here. We can talk more about the turbulence and stuff later, but we're going to get ready for our first guest. Imagine, if you will, your child walking alone in the hot sun for miles each day, all by themselves, risking kidnapping, rape, or worse, just to bring home some water that might make them sick. Imagine farmers right here in Louisiana watching helplessly as an irrigation canal that's only halfway built crumbles away in the summer rains, washing away their crops, washing away their homes. Imagine this in your mind. Vast, vast stretches of rural Louisiana, rural Mississippi, more than 100 clean water drinking systems sitting abandoned, leaving cities and towns that were promised safe water, instead getting nothing but bags of cement and rusty pipes in the street. Now, this picture is not unfolding here in Louisiana, thank God, but it is happening in Kenya and in Nepal and Lebanon and lots of other places. And this is not the aftermath of some natural disaster. These miseries are the result of decisions that Donald Trump and Elon Musk made on behalf of the American people. They cut all foreign aid and dismantled the U.S. Agency for International Development, halting water and sanitation projects in 16 countries, projects that were meant to bring hope and stability to millions of people. Those projects are not going to happen. And the human toll is staggering, frankly. The Lancet Medical Journal is one of the most reputable sources for this type of information, and they're warning these cuts could potentially lead to 14 million excess deaths in the next 5 years, including 4.5 million dead babies and children under five. And even members of the Trump administration, U.S. officials, have admitted that leaving these projects halfway done, still bearing the American flag, destroys trust in the United States, and it gives extremist groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, and others a new recruitment tool. And at the same time that we are having conversations on this program about how America is a Christian nation or is founded on Judeo-Christian values, I believe it's worth asking, is this what Jesus wanted for us? Because the Bible cannot be clearer about our duty to care for the poor and the sick and the vulnerable. You already know. Matthew 25, Jesus says, I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. Whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. In Proverbs 19, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. Now, folks, cutting off clean water projects that keep children from dying of disease, I believe that is a betrayal of our moral obligation, and it breaks faith with the teachings that we claim to live by. If we are truly a Christian nation, we help the least of these, no matter where they live. We have the knowledge, we have the money, but it would seem that we no longer have the guts. Colin Thomas Jensen was previously the National Security Advisor to the U.S. Agency for International Development, and he coordinated USAID's policy work on a number of very high-profile humanitarian emergencies, including those in Ukraine, Sudan, and across the Middle East. He was on the ground with USAID in Sudan during the Darfur genocide in the early 2000s, and he is now the Director of Impact at the Aurora Humanitarian Initiative. And he joins us next after this. If you want to get in on the conversation, you can shoot me a call, shoot me a text at 504-260-1870. I'll read 100% of the texts you send in today. I'll reply to as many as I can, and I'll read the very best ones on the air. So make them count, please. We'll come back with Colin Thomas Jensen from the Aurora Humanitarian.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Initiative. Stick around. Our guest this hour on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line is Colin Thomas Jensen, who was previously the National Security Advisor to the USAID Administrator. He is now the Director of Impact at the Aurora Humanitarian Initiative, and he joins us on the line right now. Colin, thank you so much for making the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ian. I'm really happy to speak to you.
Are you overseas right now? I understand there was some confusion about how we were going to get you on the air.
Yeah, I'm actually right now in Yerevan, which is the capital of Armenia. The organization I work for was founded by Armenians and Armenian Americans to remember the Armenian genocide and try to support humanitarians who are working today to save people's lives in conflict zones.
God's work. Well, I imagine it's an awkward time of day there. We'll try and not keep you up too late. Many of these, these clean water and sanitation projects that we're talking about today, that will not be completed, or at least not by USAID. They were almost done. So a lot of these supplies are just kind of sitting around on the ground, rotting, rusting. How does it feel for you to know that the U.S. government walked away in the middle of these jobs?
Well, it's devastating. First and foremost, for the beneficiaries of this assistance, there was no cavalry coming to pick up what USAID and the U.S. government dropped. By virtue, really, of the way in which the administration went about it, they issued a stop work order, which effectively demanded that any organization that was receiving U.S. government dollars immediately stop what they were doing. So if they were, for example, digging a well in a village that doesn't have water or doesn't have access to clean water, and they were, 2 inches away from hitting that aquifer to bring water to thousands of people, they had to put the drill down and report that they had stopped. And in most cases, that is exactly what happened. And we're seeing now stories of U.S. assistance, whether it's food assistance or other commodities that were going to humanitarian crises, being burned. There's a report that $600,000 worth of food is going to be set on fire and destroyed because it has gone stale and would not be healthy to deliver, simply because the decision to do reforms was made, but the way in which it was done was extremely crass and cruel, in my opinion.
What are the health consequences of leaving these projects incomplete? What does this look like for people in those communities, in those countries?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at this, two big consequences. At USAID, which was, when I was there, a $40 billion a year aid agency, almost 75% of that funding went toward either public health projects, which essentially is helping to eliminate infectious disease, helping to track pandemics or breakouts of diseases that might eventually make it to the United States. I think the big program that is most well known, I think, was the program that George W. Bush launched in the early 2000s to combat the AIDS epidemic in Africa. Mm-hmm. It's estimated that program has saved 25 million lives. So there's public health, and then there's humanitarian assistance. And this is the kind of water and sanitation projects that you're talking about. This is food assistance to people who don't have access to food. This is nutritional support to women, children who are starving and don't have enough nutrition to make it through the day. And so it's, the effects are kind of in two different ways. With the public health side, I think we're seeing now estimates that a very credible medical journal called The Lancet published a report recently that suggests that as many as 14 million people could die as a direct or indirect result of USAID's evisceration by 2030, and that 4.5 million of those will likely be children under 10. That's simply as a result of, if we cut assistance, if we're not providing mosquito nets, if we're not providing for malaria prevention, if we're not providing antiretroviral drugs for AIDS to suppress the AIDS virus or the HIV virus and prevent full-blown AIDS and the spread of that pandemic, if we are stepping away from seriously infectious diseases like polio and tuberculosis, that will certainly spread faster and kill more people as a result of this drop in assistance. That's one thing. And then second, in the humanitarian space, these are places that are already on the knife's edge. Most often places like Sudan, like Eastern Congo, like Somalia, places where, people are already living in a conflict zone, under duress, are often displaced from their homes, don't have access to food, don't have access to clean water. Gaza, of course, being the most public example of that today. These places are not now receiving the assistance that they might have received had the U.S. government continued to provide it. And as I said, there's no one stepping in to fill that gap in any significant way at this point. And so, more people will die of starvation. And we already know, certainly from the reporting of of journalists that, you know, to suggest, as the U.S. government has, that no one's dying right now is patently false.
Thank you, Colin. I have a very diverse audience on this program, you know, to include people who are hearing this and are thinking about, oh, God, what have we done? How can we help? This is awful. And then also some people that are, you know, I'm not trying to insult anybody here, but people that might be a little more cynical and that are just saying, hey, man,
sure,
we don't have that money, or we should be spending that money on Americans who need help. But it's not just about the money, and it's not just about the health outcomes for these communities.
Correct.
I would love for you to explain, money aside, health considerations aside, how does America turning our backs on these communities make Americans less safe?
Sure. One is one I alluded to just now, just the, you know, the programs that we're helping our government monitor the spread of infectious disease overseas, the likelihood that somebody who contracts, say, the Ebola virus in Africa, the likelihood that they will slip through the screening because the screening is either depleted or non-existent and make it onto an airplane, come to the United States and infect someone here, as happened with the outbreak in 2014. I think that's more likely. And especially with, it's not just Ebola, it's a number of diseases like tuberculosis and polio that are highly infectious, that can spread quickly. The Marburg virus, you know, we had experts in the field, you know, patriotic Americans with scientific knowledge and understanding who could have gone and been doctors and made a lot more money, but instead chose to devote their lives and their careers to public service. Those people are now out of a job, you know, in addition to the impact that these cuts have had on on people overseas. It's also, you know, ordinary Americans who've lost their jobs, who've had to switch careers, who are also suffering as a result of this. Mm-hmm. I think second, and this really goes back to why USAID exists, USAID was founded by John F. Kennedy in the 1960s at the heart of the Cold War. And at that announcement, you know, when he announced the founding of the organization, of the agency, you know, he made a couple of big points. One, he made the moral case. And I understand, certainly, if people feel like we don't have a responsibility as America to be the world's doctor, the world's health provider, I understand that sentiment. But the second point that he made, which I think speaks to what you're asking about, is that our benevolence overseas, the United States being seen as a protector, as a country that would be there in times of crisis, that was there to help, even at a time when we might have been doing other things in the world during the Cold War that might not have been seen as so benevolent, that was a value in and of itself, because it demonstrated the compassion of the United States. And in comparison with other countries, the Soviet Union at the time, and certainly now China, that our motivations for providing that assistance was really built around wanting to do good in the world, but also wanting to advance American interests, to build strong relationships with governments, to be seen as a trusted actor who cared about other countries' citizens in the same way that we care about our own. And we're willing to, you know, put U.S. dollars, and it must be said, not a significant amount of dollars, $40 billion. I'm not saying that's not a lot of money, but that's less than 1% of the federal budget. The willingness, the actions that we were taking overseas were a part of demonstrating that the United States stood for something in the world and stood against the values that, again, the Soviet Union and now China stand for.
Yeah, it sounds like Colin is talking about soft power. You know, when we say America is the most powerful, richest country in the world, we not only mean, you know, we will come bomb you to smithereens and roll tanks through the streets if we feel like we need to do that, but also, you know, it's not charity. It's we will enter into a partnership with you. We will make sure that you have medicines and rice and clean water, and we'll help you build desalinization plants and water treatment plants and airports and all sorts of other different things so that China or Russia does not beat us to the punch. And now, you know, they can use that leverage to turn you against American interests. And there's all sorts of different ways that can work against us. So I don't know why, you know, after 60 years of us being the sort of world leader, and, you know, nobody really wants to be world cop, but I don't think that's what we're doing here. You know, there's a difference between, you know, we're going to be the chief law enforcement agency for every country on the planet, versus we are going to be the one that stabilizes these countries that otherwise will destabilize, that will hurt American interests at home and abroad. Yeah. I'm just confounded. Like, Colin, this had such strong bipartisan support for so many years, and then it seemed like overnight it turned on a dime. How did that happen so fast?
You're asking a very political question. It's been pretty well documented that, you know, some of the biggest champions of foreign assistance over the years, and in the case of the current Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, a huge champion of foreign assistance programs that were in support of democracy and human rights. He's obviously been a huge champion of democracy in Latin America, mm-hmm. his stance on Venezuela, his stance on Cuba. To see someone like Marco Rubio flip so dramatically in such a short period of time, I mean, the explanation does seem to be a willingness to be subservient to the White House and mm-hmm. what the White House and this president want to do with foreign assistance. And, to your point about kind of showing up, and I can give a very concrete example. I've served on a number of overseas disaster response teams. One of those was in Haiti after the 2010 earthquake. And if you remember, that was a completely devastating quake, killed over 200,000 people. We were there on the ground within 24 hours. And within 48 hours, we had deployed two urban search and rescue teams. These are specially trained experts in rubble removal with sniffer dogs and the ability to scan an area quickly, find people under the rubble and pull them out. And I was on the ground when a team of firefighters from Fairfax County in Virginia pulled three American citizens out of the rubble of a hotel that had completely pancaked, five floors basically falling down on top of one another. Mm-hmm. And the resulting structure was the height of a one story building. We had a devastating earthquake pretty recently after USAID during the dismantling of the agency in Myanmar. And ironically and cruelly, the contract that USAID had with Fairfax County, with Los Angeles County, with Miami-Dade, the three fire companies that did this work, those contracts were terminated the day before the earthquake. And there was, when China is showing up with an urban search and rescue team, when neighboring countries in the region are showing up with urban search and rescue teams, when European countries are showing up with urban search and rescue teams, we have no one on the ground. And that gets noticed. And it not only gets noticed, but it also costs lives.
Colin, I'd love to keep you around just about another 10 minutes. When we come back, I want to ask you more about what your organization is doing now to kind of fill in the gaps and maybe let people know that are listening if there's anything that they can do. My guest is Colin Thomas Jensen. He's the Director of Communications, Advocacy and Impact at the Aurora Humanitarian Initiative. We'll hear more about what Aurora does right after this. If you want to shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. We'll be right back after this.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
My guest is Colin Thomas Jensen from the Aurora Humanitarian Initiative. Colin, tell us about what your organization does, and if there's anything specifically that you're doing or are able to do to kind of pick up where these projects were left off by USAID. I mean, is there any chance that these projects can be saved? Has too much damage been done? Is that part of your organization's mission?
I mean, it's certainly anyone who's in philanthropy right now is pretty intensely focused on how to fill the gaping hole of the loss of U.S. assistance. And I have to say, it's not just U.S. foreign assistance that's been decimated. A number of European countries, traditional partners of the United States and providing this assistance, and who really look to the United States to lead and look to us as an example of how to behave in the world, have also lowered their foreign aid budgets. So really across the board, this type of work has taken an enormous hit. The organization I work for now, Aurora, is focused on supporting grassroots local humanitarians around the world. USAID and other big donors traditionally will be supporting, with large checks, big UN agencies, large international non-governmental organizations that provide humanitarian assistance. One of the things I experienced and one of my greatest frustrations at USAID, and I have to say, if your listeners have ever worked for any organization, if they worked for a grocery store, they could probably find some inefficiencies and things they could do better. And USAID was certainly not immune from that. One of the things we as a government didn't do very well was fund these small local organizations that were in many ways the last mile of humanitarian assistance delivery, in many ways the most important actors. When you're trying to do more with less, as we are now as a global humanitarian community, one of the most effective ways to get assistance to people is to go directly to those individuals and organizations who are providing assistance on the ground. So we have an annual prize that we award to an outstanding individual humanitarian. It's a significant amount of money, $1 million. However, not it's a drop in the bucket globally, but it's a small organization. We do what we can. But what we also do is in the process of awarding that prize, we find and we surface, extraordinary individuals who might not have ever had access to that kind of support, that kind of funding, and certainly that kind of funding without the strings attached that would necessarily come with a government grant. And so we have a network of about 110 humanitarians around the world. We have vetted them extensively and continue to do so to make sure that the money that we give them is, we can trust that they're going to spend the money in the way that told us they will. With this kind of trust and this kind of relationship with these local actors, we're able to, I think, make our contribution to this problem go a little bit further because we're imposing less work as a recipient of that aid on these folks, And at the same time, you know, working with them to provide other kinds of support that they may need to do the real work in the field.
I would like to pull in a couple of text messages I'm getting from the audience here. Here's a text that says, I only speak for myself, but as a taxpayer and a 100% disabled veteran, I spent 17 years in service being medically retired before I hit my 20-year service mark. And I'd like to see our tax funding support veteran suicide and homelessness prior to mosquito nets, medication for AIDS, and feeding others. With all due respect, the U.S. needs to fill our own cups before we pour it out, helping others. Your response?
My response is I would like to see our government do that a lot better as well, number one. I think that, you know, I certainly throughout my career have worked very closely with men and women in uniform, even on the ground in conflict zones where they have a job and us humanitarians have a job. And I think some of my closest relationships and friendships over the years and professional relationships have been with military. So for your listener, I'd first say, you know, thank you for your service. And yes, I do think that our government should do it better. At the same time, I think that we can walk in and chew gum.
I say that all the time. I always say exactly that. Walk and chew gum.
Yeah, we're
exactly right.
We are one of the wealthiest and most powerful countries in the world. You know, really the irony of the Elon Musk exercise of Doge, which was, you know, trying to root out waste, fraud, and abuse, which certainly exists in the U.S. government, was going after a small, relatively small government agency that supported folks overseas and has sadly a limited constituency here in this country, as opposed to going after the Pentagon. If you want to see waste, fraud, and abuse, I would like to introduce you to our Pentagon, where they spend billions and billions of dollars on white elephant projects, mm-hmm. on weapon systems that are no longer relevant, on projects that are, you know, without, you know, real merit scientifically or useful or utility on the battlefield. That's a place where certainly as a former U.S. government employee and someone, again, who has tremendous respect for the military and for the work that they do, I would love to see a much more efficient Pentagon and then allow some of that money to be spent in the ways that we were in the kind of work that we were doing at USAID.
Colin, I'm kind of running out of time here. I'm going to read one more text message before we wrap it up. Here's a text that says, hey, Ian, it's never going to end. We can build these people everything they need and show them how to grow rice, etc. But history shows it still won't matter. Their government, etc., will destroy it. And the people have nothing. We have to know when to say when. Your response, are these programs ineffective, as the texter says?
Well, I think that there's, I mean, that's a very cynical outlook, and I hope that I can maybe try to change his or her mind. I think, you know, what the United States has learned and other donors have learned over time is that yes, these projects can be incredibly inefficient when they are implemented in countries with authoritarian and corrupt governments, mm-hmm. and so really baked in. In 2024 and in 2025, but really no longer at USAID, but baked into the philosophy of providing assistance is, you know, if a country is corrupt, is poorly governed, we're not providing the kind of development support, the kind of economic growth support, the kind of big projects to support a government to help its citizens if the government's not helping its citizens. Where we step in situations like that is to provide immediate, you know, humanitarian assistance to meet immediate human needs, to prevent death by starvation, death by infectious disease. And so while I certainly do agree that, you know, in many situations, there has been a lot over the years and certainly, you know, instances while I was in the U.S. government where, you know, that money could have been better spent or might not have been as well spent as it could have because the governments that we were working with were not necessarily acting in good faith. But that to me doesn't mean that we kneecap the entire enterprise, particularly because I do think there's a moral argument for not allowing people to starve to death. But second, for what we were talking about earlier, that this really is soft power, and in removing that as a tool in the foreign policy toolkit, and I think really anyone at the State Department, anyone at the Defense Department will tell you this, in removing that tool with a machete, we have really handicapped our ability to be influential on the things like promoting good governance, promoting accountability, ending corruption, that would make those foreign assistance dollars go a lot further.
Colin, we have to stop here, but I could talk to you a lot longer. We'll have to do it another time. Just real quickly, on your way out the door, how can people help as individuals, just if there's one thing they can do today to help?
Well, most immediately, while the world is kind of picking up the pieces and figuring out how to reconstruct the architecture that has sort of girded humanitarian assistance and do things more efficiently, many, many organizations are facing a crisis of funding. And so I would encourage your listeners, the biggest thing you can do right now is give to credible humanitarian organizations, give to the International Committee of the Red Cross, give to Doctors Without Borders, give to the International Rescue Committee, give to the Aurora Prize. You can find us at auroraprize.com. And know that if you do a little research, if you put a little, thought into where that money's going, the people who receive it are going to spend it in good faith and do the best work that they possibly can do to keep people alive and advance human health.
Colin, I say it at the end of a lot of my interviews. I don't think I've ever meant it more. Thank you for your time, your work, and your way. We'll look forward to having you on again.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much, Ian.
When we come back, we'll read some of your text messages and phone calls. We'll get caught up with the news. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.